Good morning. Welcome to the BHI Annual Brunch. I want to thank everyone here for participating, for showing support to the Business Halacha Institute. Besides for being our annual fundraiser, this also gives us the opportunity to update all of our friends and supporters from some of the activities and growth of the past year. Baruch Hashem, over the past few months, the Beis Hayroah of BHI has been growing exponentially. We, Baruch Hashem, have been building a reputation as a place to go to resolve disputes, whether it's arbitration or din Torah or mediation. The Beis Hayroah offers efficient, effective, and professional dispute resolution. In a time where litigation costs have been skyrocketing, a typical din Torah in BHI will take typically two sessions. For a total cost, the average cost is about $1,500 for both sides combined. Baruch Hashem, again, without any advertising, just grow, by word of mouth, chaver to chaver islay, people who have come and been impressed and pleased with the process have been spreading the word. And Baruch Hashem, we've seen extreme growth over the past few months. Our halacha hotline deals with hundreds and hundreds of shilohs that are posed, either on the phone or by email. And the dayanim are busy answering queries about all areas of chayish mishpat and all areas of business. And Baruch Hashem, our educational programs from the newsletter that has distributed to approximately 7,000 people each week, to our learning programs of Baruch Hashem, been having a greater impact. This morning launches the formal launch of the Shabbos Initiative. Now the details of it, the panel will explain. But I think one point to make, one observation, is that the Shabbos Initiative in very many ways encapsulates what the mission of BHI is. Bringing together business people, legal professionals, and dayanim to identify halacha shailas in a business that are perhaps not readily apparent. To brainstorm about effective solutions, how a person can continue running his business, but run it in a way which is al pi halacha. That is the core mission of BHI. And while we're going to hear today about an example on a large corporate scale, the same takes place on a day-to-day basis in BHI with individuals or small business owners that realize that they've been overlooking an area in halacha and turn to us for guidance, for practical solutions, how to make sure that they're complying with halacha. Now, today's event took a lot of hard work. I'd like to thank BHI's board, who always stands behind us and enables us to launch the projects, Yossi, Moshe, Nicholas, and Chanoch. A special thanks to Leibel Jalovsky, our administrator, who does all of the heavy lifting behind the scenes to make sure the events are smooth. Reb Simcha Riegel as well, who is very active for this brunch. And a special thanks to Rav Chaim Cohn. The entire Business Halacha Institute reflects his vision and his dream of taking Chayish Mishpat from the theoretical and allowing people to apply it halacha l'maisa in their daily lives. Kadosh Baruch Hu should bench him with Kayach and Gazon to lead BHI for many, many years. Our panel this morning is joining Rav Chaim Cohn. We have Rabbi Avi Shron and Shragi Goldschmidt from Kamabiz. A special thank you to them that they took the opportunity when they were working on their Shabbos for their personal business. They recognized that if it's something that it could be helpful not just to them, but to the Klal as well. And they threw themselves into the Shabbos Initiative to be mefaris in it and to enable other people to benefit from the solutions that they created, the solutions that they implemented. And lastly, to moderate a session like this where we have a Rav, an attorney, and a businessman, you need a man of many talents, a person who's worn, wears many different hats, and for that it's a tremendous kavod to introduce Rav Chaim David Zwiebel.
Yeah, Shapaya. Thank you, Rav Ari. And of course, the one person that Rav Ari's introduction did not include in terms of mentioning the incredible amount of time and effort and leadership and guidance that he provides to the BHI and B'chal to Kal Yisrael Zavari himself. Thank you very much. I remember when the Business Halacha Institute started, so I used to, you know, I had to compartmentalize this in my brain. What exactly is this organization? What is it doing? And I say, this is an organization that's devoted to bringing Chesh and Mishpat back to Kal Yisrael. We all know that the Dalek Chalkei Shulchan Aruch, and one of the Chalkei Shulchan Aruch that has been largely forgotten, and certainly the details of it have been largely forgotten, was Chesh and Mishpat. It was kind of replaced with an inaccurate substitution of the concept of Dina de Malchus Adina. So what do we need to know about Chesh and Mishpat anyway? So Baruch Hashem, the VHI, the Business Halacha Institute, came back to remind Kal Yisrael that there is such a thing as Chesh and Mishpat. There are certain things that we have to understand about how to conduct our business, how to deal with business relationships, and all of the things that come up in the practice of business today, and those are governed by a whole chelik in Shulchan Aruch called Chesh and Mishpat. This morning's gathering requires me to reconfigure a little bit and expand the compartmentalization of what the BHI is all about. And the truth is that we're talking about today, obviously, Shailas to come up in the area of Archaim, and the issues that come up in a business setting. We'll focus today particularly, we have our panelists here are both in the real estate business, working for Camabees, one of the most chashuva real estate firms in the city, in the world. We'll, I think, hear a particular focus on issues that they have grappled with in their business, which may be in some respect particular to the real estate industry, but we're going to hear quite a bit which will be of more general applicability as well. But again, the broader reminder is that b'chol derachecha do'ehu, right? This is the responsibility of Klal Yisrael to, in every respect, we have to know the Rabbeinu Shalom. And knowing the Rabbeinu Shalom means knowing the halacha, knowing what the Rabbeinu Shalom's Torah tells us to do in our dealings, in our business, in the way we conduct our lives. B'chol derachecha. And that daya requires a full encompassing scope of knowledge and understanding. Hilchos Shabbos. Hilchos Shabbos is something which applies in the work world. I remember when I was coming out of law school and interviewing for a position in certain large firms that were interviewing at that time, and one of the firms was a Jewish firm, and I went into one of the partners in the firm, a gentleman by the name of Mr. Gluck, and I was wearing my yarmulke, and we spoke a little bit about the fact that I was a Shomer Shabbos. So he said, you know, we have a policy in this firm, we're very receptive to all kinds of people, whatever their religious observance, we have a number of Orthodox Jewish associates, but, you know, off the record, I have to tell you on a personal level, I resent them. I resent them. He says, here I am, it's Friday afternoon, I'm working on a big deal with Mel down the office, down the corridor, and Mel says all of a sudden he's got to go home, he's got to spend the Shabbos with his family, with his children, you know, I get the double load of doing not only the part of the job that I was supposed to do, but also the part of the job that he had to do. So we're very tolerant over here, but I resent it. It's a very warm welcome to this firm that I was interviewing with. It's not the firm that I ultimately signed up with, Shamshin, don't worry. They just kept that in their minds. They didn't say it out explicitly, but that was my exposure to the fact that in the work world, you know, it's not just a question of leaving early. There are issues. There are issues that have to be dealt with, that have to be grappled with, including dealing with non-Jews, including dealing with Jews. Our Zaydis had issues over here with Shmir Shabbos, which were of a totally different nature. Those were if you want to keep your job, then you have to work on Saturday. If you take off on Saturday, don't bother coming in on Monday. Those were the issues in that tekufa. Baruch Hashem, we're past that. Baruch Hashem, by and large, today a person is able to be a Shomer Shabbos and have access to employment opportunities, to jobs, to do business, all of those opportunities basically are open to him. We still get calls from time to time about people who are Shomer Shabbos in the workforce who are having difficulties. But by and large, that particular issue and challenge has been dealt with. Now the challenge is more squarely on us. We are all committed to Shmirah Shabbos. Not a one of us, even the most person from the from any type of background, whatever it may be, if he's a Shomer Shabbos, he's committed to Shmirah Shabbos. Shmirah Shabbos in every aspect of his life. And so he knows certain halachas about Bishul, and he knows certain halachas about turning on electricity, and perhaps he knows other halachas that relate to him in his home setting. But what about the Shabbos issues that arise in the business setting? And that's what the Shabbos initiative is all about, to acquaint Klal Yisrael to the fact that Shabbos issues do arise in the workplace, in the business world. They are challenges, different kinds of challenges, challenges that can be met if you have an understanding of the issue and if you follow the guidance of Gedalei HaPeskim and how to deal with them. But this needs Pirsum. And this is what the Business Halacha Institute is launching with today's session, this kind of Pirsum, to discuss some of the issues that arise under the heading of being a Shomer Shabbos businessman in today's modern technological world, where we have interactions with all kinds of different people. And then proceeding from there, Be'ezus Hashem, to a broader campaign of educating Klal Yisrael about these issues. So I think this is a very important gathering, and we're very fortunate to have people here, besides Rav Cohn, of course, who has emerged as perhaps the foremost expert in many of these areas affecting business halacha, but as well also two people with their feet on the ground, so to say, who are very much involved in the real world, in business settings, who are going to enlighten us on some of the issues that they've come up with. So with that hakdama, I'd like to call on Rav Cohn to please tell us about Lamaisa. What are some of the specific shilas and issues that we need to be aware of?
Thank you, Chaim David, for your excellent words, as usual. So to say, you paved the path. I want to thank also, obviously, for the Chavrei HaMechon, and specifically Rabbi Marburger and Rabbi Levi Jalovsky, who are behind the scenes and sometimes in front too, who make all of this work. But in particular, all those Chavrei who almost anonymously are working day and night, literally, to end the shyly sitting with the terrace and doing everything which is needed in order to succeed. I must also thank to Avi and Shragi, both of them, who were extremely instrumental to have this happen, not only today, but generally speaking. Without their help, we would not be where we are today. You might not know where we are today. It might be that in the course of our discussion, it's Megalit Sefer Mechasit Fochaim, a little bit revealed, more not revealed. I'm personally a great believer in Lechoshu Yofem in Atzniyus. Everything which is done on a quiet level has more chances to succeed, for success and everything. We need to do whatever we need to do for publicity, but nevertheless, it's much more effective if it's done on a quiet level. Coming to discuss Legufa Sheninyan, what we are discussing today. So I need to give you a little introduction here as far as the halachas are concerned. We need to understand, first of all, that we have to differentiate if you're looking from the perspective of an employer or from the perspective of the employee. You're going to hear more from the perspective of an employer than from the perspective of an employee. But obviously, the employee should not be forgotten either, but we cannot cover everything in this short period of time. So therefore, we basically will address the different industries of interest and the kind of employment that we're talking about here. There's a tshuva of the Shalom Eshiv, which I always quote, which is important to remember. Shalom Eshiv writes to somebody who seems to be a wealthy person and had the mother to have he had the merit to have a son-in-law who was very learned, and the father-in-law engaged in a business that needed to be active on Shabbos. The young man learned the halachos, the pertinent halachos, and came to certain ways how to address this issue. The Shulam Meshiv writes first, young man, writes to him, Avrich, writes to him, listen, the halachos from Simon Reshman Gimel to Reshman Vov are from the most difficult halachos in Shulchan Aruch. And you, although you learn it and so on and so forth, do me a favor, don't touch this halacha lemaisa. Very interesting. Very, very interesting. And it's true. The truth of the matter is that probably this young man knew more than Chaim Kohl, probably and most probably. Now, nevertheless, we found that we have no choice but to live up to the word of the day and to do what we have to do. So said, we are discussing three different industries that are here of interest. Real estate, health industry, nursing homes and the like, and then we're talking about stores which by definition have to be open on Shabbos. For example, a person has a retail chain store in malls and so on and so forth where contractually he's bound and obligated to open it on Shabbos. So those are the three different industries in principle which are of interest. As far the issues are concerned, so here we have four different categories of employment, so to say. Employer-employee, so to say. One is the poet. Poet is a worker, a regular worker, a person who's hired for the day or being paid for the day, depends how you learn halacha. Here, this halacha is, if you have a goy, a non-Jew, a Gentile, who is being hired, being paid on the pay schedule on the day, according to some, or at least who could be ordered to work at whatever time he's being told to work, like a 9-to-5 kind of a schedule, if you have such a person who is a Gentile and working for you on Shabbos, so then it's Amir Le'akum. Now, Amir Le'akum is not only, it's a Shavuz. Besides the fact that Shabbos, the Shavuzim of Shabbos are more stringent than anything else, but if you're talking about Mekach HaMemkev, it's much more stringent. According to some poskim, it's a question of the Raisa even. So, and after all, I'm always saying, you know, we're not Karaites, so we're not Karoi. So therefore, the Chilul Shabbos of it is severe because it's also done in a public way, and therefore, what we're discussing is an element of Chilul Hashem besides everything else. That's a poet. Then you have a kabbalah. A kabbalah is a jobber. A person is a contractor who is not paid by the day or is not bound to work at a particular time. He might have a deadline, but is not bound to work on Shabbos. He, in principle, he should be permitted, if he's a Gentile, to work on Shabbos. Why? Because he's not ordered to work on Shabbos. Nevertheless, first of all, there's sometimes the issue of Maris Ayin, that people will confuse between the issue and think that he is a poet. Besides that, it might very well be that there's no choice, but he has to work on Shabbos. It's what we call in Halach Koveh Melachto. Therefore, Koveh Melachto might turn him, this Kabbal, into a poet. That's number two. Number three, we have a situation of a Shutef. A Shutef is a partner. A partner is, in principle, an alter ego of the other person. Therefore, if somebody is a Gentile partner, it might be worse even than anything else. Why? Because if the Gentile partner is working on Shabbos, you are working on Shabbos as well. It's even worse than a poet in a sense. So therefore, there has to be a dissolution of the partnership before Shabbos. Even then, it's also simple if we have here employees of the partnership working on Shabbos. So although it's officially dissolved, the partnership is dissolved, nevertheless, being that by definition, the one to pay all those employees is the company, so the dissolution is virtually immaterial. It doesn't count. And this is one of the major problems that we face it always, because people say, oh, we have a shutef for goy, mazel tov, so therefore, it doesn't help you too much. Then finally, you have another kind of a partnership, which is not a partnership in the assets, but partnership in profit. In the law, it's called an oris. This situation is very common, and in fact, in halacha, very usable to find solutions how we could handle all those situations. So those are the four categories: poel, kablin, shutef, and aris. Those four that we are. And those situations, I don't have to tell you, have it all over the place. I just told my good friends, I had a phone call here on Erev Shabbos. Half an hour before Shabbos, I admit I dumped Shabbos early this time. I'm sorry, forgive me. Yeah. But half an hour before I went to shul. Half an hour before I went to shul, a fellow calls me up. I don't know who the person is. Maybe he's in the audience. I don't even know who it is. He told me his name. I couldn't recognize him. He didn't have anything. The fellow tells me, you know, we just closed with a nursing home today. I never realized it's about Shabbos. Could you make a Shita Shabbos? There's such a thing called Shita Shabbos. So I kept quiet. I didn't know what to answer. Then the fellow says, okay, so then could we make it on Monday and have it work retroactively? So you're not even laughing, right? Neither did I. So I will tell you how I defined it. I defined it as follows. That we're talking about, this is the attitude. Similar to what we all know, that you are permitted to borrow and lend on ribis. You only have to make a shtayiske. Similarly too, also you are permitted to have a business work on Shabbos, but you have to make a shtay Shabbos. It doesn't go the other way around. It has to go the other way around. Meaning, you are not permitted to rent on ribis. But there are ways how you could handle it in order to avoid the issa. You are not permitted to handle your business on Shabbos. However, there are ways how you could handle it. That's what it is. So here, I don't have to tell you. What happens in the famous case of oversight, right? If you have, let's say you have some kind of a commercial building and you need to install a new air conditioner over there, or air conditioning system, the only days that you have here available where you not interfere in the regular business of people over there is on weekends, so you, by definition, you have to do it on Shabbos. So here you have a kablan, right? You took a contractor to do it, but you told him, by definition, to do it on the weekend, on Shabbos, so therefore it's like a poel. It's not only a question of marisain, it could be it's even a poel, depends how the structure works and so on and so forth. But I'm giving you a classic example how it could work. I don't have to tell you if you're talking about health industry, by definition, if you have a nursing home, anything of this sort, people need to be served on Shabbos. Very often you're talking about doing things which are associated with Chilul Shabbos. Now, do we have sometimes a theorem that you have your Chodesh Shesh V'Sakana? Well, yes and no. Yeah. Is there a head of Evo? Maybe not. Maybe yes. I don't know. Yeah. In Yiddish, you're saying it goes on hinafis. Hinafis, in English, you call it chicken legs. It's certainly not the kind of solution you would like to find in other areas. Certainly not. Certainly not when you're talking about legal issues. You would never permit your lawyer to take these kinds of precautions, I could guarantee you. So therefore, this health industry. And then, finally, I don't have to tell you, if you're talking about people having now a chain of retail stores, all over, right? It's in malls, and by definition, they're bound contractually to have it open 24/7. So here you have it, he's doing business on Shabbos. So those are the issues here. Those are the issues that happen based on the four different categories that I mentioned to you. Thank you.
Okay. Avi, you're going to answer?
Yes.
Okay. So, and giving us a little bit of a picture of how this is translated into something very concrete, I'd like to ask Avi Schroen from Cannabis to address us today.
So just some background. Obviously many of you know my family and we've been in real estate for a long time. But things change over time, and the types of properties that we may have run 30 or 40 years ago are different than the properties we're running today. The laws change. The way of doing business changes also. So although we may have had certain heterum to rely on at one time, but when you have to take another look at things and you have to say, okay, what are we doing today? What type of properties are we running? What have we come across? We need to be able to have a constant open line of communication, really. And that's where Rav Kohn came in, where he came down to our office, he met with the staff, we asked Shilas, and we came up with a structure, which was something we didn't do in the past, is have a very formal structure for all of the properties, everything falling into that structure, which I'll get into. But what has changed? So maybe 40 or 50 years ago, you could have had an apartment building where you didn't keep tabs on the time of the employees. The super may have lived in the building, or maybe didn't even pay him. He just lived there and fixed it for the free rent. Maybe he used to get tips from the tenants in order to fix things, which may be one type of shiloh. But today things are much different than that. We're very formal. We have time clocks. We have union contracts. We have buildings which have provided much more service than they did in the past. Years ago, it was not very common to have doorman service or 24-hour service. So for the tenants to to expect 24-hour service, or for there to be reason for there to be services provided on Shabbos, pulling out the garbage. So when we're dealing with those issues, and this is very common today, the garbage may have to be pulled out on a Shabbos or on a Friday night for Saturday morning pickup. If you pull it out before 5 o'clock, you'll get a ticket from the sanitation department. It's your worker who's pulling out that garbage. He's on your clock. He is punching your electronic time clock with his hand, putting his hand into an electronic punch clock, registering that he was there, working on your clock, possibly if he's a union worker getting overtime for that time. And if he doesn't do that, and the garbage is not pulled and he gets a ticket, you're going to write him up, and you're going to make sure that the next week, Friday night at 6 o'clock, when he's supposed to be pulling out that garbage, he pulled it out. And we're talking about during the winter. So you can't tell me he's doing midas atzmai, pulling out the garbage at 6 o'clock Friday night, when you're sitting with him in your office, or your manager, or your employee is writing him up and docking his pay and making sure that he pulls out that garbage on time Friday night at 6 o'clock. He's not doing midas atzmai. He's doing it because you're explicitly telling him to do it. You're asking him to work on Shabbos. So that's something that is very clear today, that we have very clear rules. And within our organization, because of all of the regulation, real estate is one of the most heavily regulated industries. The unions make it even more regulated. We like to keep track of things. We like to know what's going on. And we don't want to wind up with an order from workers' comp where our records are not buttoned up with the I's dotted and the T's crossed and everything is correct and we know exactly who is in and who is out. So the Hedra of Das Atma doesn't really work that well. We also recently took over some properties that there's 24-hour doorman service. It's a luxury building, and that was something that we didn't have in the past. And you have a doorman standing at the door with a requirement to service your tenants, whatever they need. He may be the one who is taking complaints from the tenant. He has a computer on his desk. Friday night, Shabbos morning, a tenant walks over to him and says, "My faucet is broken." He punches into the computer. He's creating a work ticket. He may even sometimes be the one who's calling the super and say, "Listen, you know, this person is a good tenant. Let's get it done today on Shabbos." The super may decide it's worthwhile, because he's a good tenant, to punch in and start working. You receive the payroll records. You see that he worked overtime on Shabbos, and he tells you the reason why he did it is because the tenant is paying you a lot of money per month, high-paying tenant in a penthouse. You don't want to tick them off. They may be politically connected. You certainly don't want to get them upset. But again, the employee, even though he's making a decision on his own, what we found out is that since we're tracking him and paying him for his time, he becomes our employee, our worker. Switching to commercial buildings, and that's something which Rav Cohn brought up before, which is a shaila that I actually asked him a few years ago, is, and this really did happen, where we have an office building, we have tenants that need to be in their space, working in a comfortable environment. Many modern office buildings have curtain wall systems without windows that open or close, and you need to be able to provide to them cooling and heating 24, during the workday at least, 6 to 5 days a week. If you need to replace a unit on the floor, for that entire floor, you have to remove an air conditioning system. You have to cut it up and take it out. It's a minimum of 2 to 3 days' work. It can't be done in one day. So that's something we discussed with Rav Cohn, is how to go about doing it. How do we go ahead and install this new unit and do it only over a weekend? And if you wait for the July 4th weekend, which has the extra day, then you can't get the guys to do it because they all want to go on vacation on July 4th. They don't want to come in and work on July 4th. They only want to work on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday when it's not so hot out, and you can't do it during the week. If you do it during the week, you're going to have all your tenants complaining, and they're not going to understand why are you closing down their business. So it gets... That's another typical example that gets challenging. And then, of course, when you're running a full-service building, Yom Tif, of course, is always something we have to think about also, because even though we may be able to schedule our crews to dial back for Shabbos, and they understand, okay, Shabbos comes, they're not doing the apartment renovations. Shabbos comes, they're not going to be doing the repairs, they're all off, and only take care of the emergencies, and we try as much as possible to educate them that certain emergencies are permitted because you're servicing people, and there's an inyan of kavod habrias, there's an inyan of chayil she'ein bei sakana, there's an inyan of, but Yom Tov is not that way, and many times the union workers are not off on Shabbos and Yom Tov. They want to come to work. You have cleaning contracts that you have office buildings that the buildings need to get cleaned, because if it's a Yom Tov is during the week, they want to come in the next morning, they know that the garbage was taken out, the desk was dusted. How do you handle that as a firm management company? Instructing people to do work for you. Sometimes you're even instructing a Freya-owned company that all those employees are working directly for another yid, and you don't have the heter that it's a guy. So that's another issue that we had to deal with. Kahena v'kahena, once you really start diving deep into your business and you find that also that there are certain things that are going on, you may not even realize, you may have instructed people 10 years ago, oh, Shabbos, we don't do work. And then somebody slips and says, yeah, of course we do that on Saturday. Well, you know, how else do you expect to get it done? Yeah, you mentioned it, but we thought you really didn't mean it. Now, that may work in the guy's mind, but Klapei Shmaya Galia, if your employee is doing work for you on Shabbos, is getting recorded as work being done on Shabbos. So we have to be vigilant, we have to be aware, we have to know what's going on in our business, we have to... This happened to us also. We may have purchased a property, and sometimes you don't even realize all of the contracts. You just keep the same manager in place, and you don't even realize all the contracts and deals they have going on, what's going on Shabbos. There's somebody coming out on Shabbos to do certain work. He does the polishing of the marble on Shabbos. Why? Because that's what he's been doing for the last 30 years, because that's a quiet time for them. But and you never thought to ask, yeah, you're signing off on the check for the polishing of the marble, but you don't ask them what day of the week do they come. Again, you're taking over a new property, you have to be vigilant and know what's going on, when people come. And with Reb Chaim's and the Business Law Institute structure, it really helped us resolve a lot of these issues, where even the ones that we don't know about and is able to resolve it. Something that I want to stress, because this is something we discuss all the time, especially when we have a meeting with our employees and we ask Shilas, is that we use the structure as a backstop for emergencies and for those things you don't know about, and for when we're stuck and you just, it's a shas of chak really, that something has to get done on Shabbos. But our goal is not to operate on Shabbos. Our goal is to be Shomer Shabbos and to minimize and as much as possible anything that goes on Shabbos. But b'shas of chak, we have a structure in place which is able to allow us to work around and to be able to minimize the I don't know that exactly how to put it, the issur, the het, the chomer, but to als b'dieved, it works. I think that's the way to put it. Okay, I think we'll ask who's next on the...
Shragi.
Okay, just to introduce, Shragi Goldschmidt is our in-house counsel, and he worked very closely with Reb Chaim in structuring the structure that we have in place, and which is something that took a long time because we had to go through all different departments, payroll and human resources, union contracts, and so on, in order to be able to accomplish what we accomplished.
Thank you very much, Avi. So I guess it's my job here today to talk about the mechanics of how this was implemented at Canopies. Oh, repairs. Okay, absolutely. Rev Cohn would like me to mention the fact that a big issue when it comes to Shabbos and Yom Tov can be repairs, right? You know, let's say you a call comes in from apartment 6A and 6B. Mrs. Smith in 6A and Mrs. Rosenshine, a Friday in 6B, they call and they decide that there's a few types of repairs. On the one hand, they may say, my Venetian blinds are crooked, so I need someone to come and then screw them in right because I don't like the way the light looks, etc. You know, we can all agree that that's probably not a great emergency, but perhaps in her mind it is. But she may call the next time and say, my toilet is leaking. And on the one hand, you might think to yourself, okay, no, so the toilet will leak a little. What's the big deal? But if you let that happen and it goes on like that over Shabbos, you can chas v'shalom have a real sakana. You can have floors and ceilings collapsing. And so there can be emergency situations and, you know, the list goes on and on. Someone can have a gas leak. There can be snow outside. You know, and many things can happen in people's apartments that cannot wait. So this is really, Rav Kohn is absolutely right. This is absolutely an issue where these things need to be remediated on Shabbos. And as Avi said, you don't want it as your lechatchila tikkun position, but you need that safety net. You need that net so that things can be fixed for the people who are going to be calling, whether it's their Venetian blinds, their toilet, or more. That's why we need a system like this. Okay, so now I'll talk about how at Cambabes the Schroen family implemented the solution that's here under the umbrella of the Shabbos Initiative, working with Rav Kohn and the wonderful people at the BHI. First of all, I'm going to just talk about one word, and you know, you probably expect me to start with the mechanics of how it was implemented, but in my opinion, every attorney, anyone who's going to implement something for their client, should be expert in the nuts and bolts, the legal technicalities of whatever it is they're implementing. But I think the better attorneys think, you know, not just as attorneys, but as counselors and advisors. You put yourself in the position of the business person so you can advise them properly and really in an ideal fashion. So the first word I want to throw out there is trust. You have to start by selecting someone, a Gentile, a non-Yid, who you're going to work with. And it's the job of the attorney not just to draw up any agreement and draft it properly, but to make sure and to guide his client, make sure that that person is choosing an appropriate, you know, that's part of your job as an attorney. You want to choose an appropriate Gentile to work with. So Avi and his family did that here. They chose a Gentile who they had a relationship with for a while, and if you have that in your business, that's certainly a wonderful thing. So what do you do with that person? So there's really two components. Number one, you set up a management company for that person. Now, that person may already have, the Gentile may have, his or her own management company. If not, you can set that up. Any attorney can do that in literally less than a day for not a lot of money at all to form, to incorporate, to set up a management company. Now, what you do is you have you may be a small business with 3 or 4 employees, and, you know, obviously it gets a little bit more complicated as you scale up. Some businesses out there, be they real estate or healthcare or what have you, have hundreds and hundreds of employees. And what you do is you have those employees work for that Gentile manager, that management company. So when they go out and they're doing work on Shabbos, they're not working for you, they're working for the non-Jewish manager. But the trick here is at the same time, in addition to having that Gentile-owned management company, you take that manager and you make him or her a revenue share partner in the business. So let me be clear. That does not mean, in the real estate context, that the Gentile manager has a share and owns the bricks and mortar and the land beneath the buildings. That's not a discussion for now, but arguably that would be far too dangerous and people would be very, very reluctant to actually give away a share on the bricks and mortar. But instead, halachically, as Rav Kohn, I'm sure, will describe in a few minutes, halachically, what you can do is allow them to share a percentage of the revenue in the business, the gross revenue. Now, you might be thinking, well, wait a minute, I'm going to give away a piece of my gross revenue? That seems like it could really expose me to giving away a lot. But the truth is, that's not the way it works. If it's someone who's currently an employee, let's say that person's making $75,000, or let's say you're bringing in somebody new, and you think, what's fair? This person should make $75,000, $105,000, $125,000, whatever it is. You simply make a mathematical calculation. You look at your gross revenues, and you come up with a percentage pegged to what you want that person to own. Now, it's got to be real. It can't be a farce. So if you, say, for example, implement a 1-year agreement with that individual, and at the end of the year, it comes time to true it up, and you say, oh, you know, I'm a little bit off, so I wanted that person to make $75,000, but turns out they're going to be making $81,000 because I gave them X percent of the gross revenue, you actually have to be prepared. Not just prepared, you actually have to pay them that amount, because otherwise it's clearly not a legally binding agreement, and it's a farce. So you do that. So on the one hand, you have the employees now working for this individual. And on the other hand, you have this person sharing in the business. So the work then is not being done for you. Now, you have to make sure as an attorney, I don't know if there are many attorneys in the room, but even if you're just a business person, you want to make sure that your attorney takes care of you and protects you properly. Even if it's somebody that you know very, very well, it would not exactly be my recommendation to enter into a lifetime contract or even a 10-year contract with no out. A smarter idea would probably be a 1-year contract. And you also can build in protections whereby that person can't enter into high dollar or very, very important contracts without checking with you. If some, you know, you can put a financial tripwire, anything above whatever is, you know, best for you, 25,000, 50,000, 100,000, whatever it is. You can also build in safety valves so that this person can't just wake up one morning and decide, you know what, I think half the employees here at this company, you know, historically are bad people, so I'm just going to get rid of all of them. You want to make sure the person can't, chas v'shalom, one day wake up and, you know, with a little coup, walk out with half your employees. But that's why I started with the word trust. You really want to start with somebody that you trust. Now, at the same time, you have to be fair to that person. You're not going to take advantage of somebody. If anybody's an intelligent, good manager, and that's the kind of person you want, and it's someone you trust, you obviously have to protect them too. So you have to be prepared to indemnify them. If there are lawsuits, and this person now is the official legal employer of the employees that work at these buildings, anybody who's intelligent is going to say, well, wait a minute, I'm the Gentile manager. I don't want to be exposed. Who's protecting me? So you have to be prepared to add that person to your insurance policies, and you have to be prepared to support them with the right infrastructure. If you're a small company, say you're a real estate company, you have one building, it probably will not be too onerous to work out the benefits and the payroll and all that. But if you have dozens, and maybe more than dozens, maybe you have hundreds of employees, all of a sudden, from an HR perspective, it's not that simple. And that's what, frankly, in the Sharon family's instance, took some time working with Rav Cohn. And his staff here. You know, you have to think about payroll and workers' compensation and benefits and insurance and all those matters. It all can be done, and now is not the forum to talk about specific solutions or exactly what the Sharons did. But the point is, I think it's important to point out that the Sharons really were, in my opinion, the Nachshon and Aminoda, right? I mean, if I took you into the forest to a redwood tree and I gave you an axe and I said, here, chop it down. I don't know about you, but I'm not much of a woodsman, so I probably wouldn't do too well. But if 100 or 200 people, to go back to the old story, had taken a swing of the axe and chopped that tree, by the time you get there, a couple of chops, and boom, the tree falls down. So I'm very comfortable saying that with the work that's been done here, any business person in most any area can come to the HI and can explain, you know, like I can tell you from personal experience, Rav Cohn, Rabbi Marburger, they're absolutely wonderful people. They're a pleasure to deal with. You can talk about confidentially your own personal context, and I think a lot of the work's already been done because it's not quite an out-of-the-box solution. It needs to be tailored to each and every individual situation, but it's close to an out-of-the-box solution whereby they can explain exactly what has to happen. There's a document template, a management agreement that you can use. Nobody's going to charge you for it. It's out there, L'tovas HaKlal, and they can help you set up something that works for your own business.
Thank you very much, Shragi. Does this mic work? Can you hear me on the mic? Yeah? Okay, great. So that was a very fascinating presentation. I'd like to just pick up on one thing, Shragi, that you left us with, which you said that the Sharon family here were the Nachshon Ben Aminadovs in our community for setting up this type of structure, a structure which, as Avi described it earlier, was a stopgap against the bidyevet situations where you really have no other way to deal with problems, and that this was necessary in order to provide that bidyevetic stopgap to deal with those kinds of situations. So I guess that leaves me with a little bit of a nervous and frightened perspective over here, which is that are we saying that those who have not yet joined Nachshon and jumping into the water, even bidyevet, don't have a proper system in place? Are we speaking about this as being an absolute prerequisite? What is everybody else doing? Rav Cohn?
As you say in English, I mind my own business, you know, so I'm really not privy to say what other people do or don't. It's not here to criticize other methods or anything of the sort. This is not really the issue here. What I would like to mention is something else, and this is that I'm sure that some people will say it might maybe work. It might maybe work if you're talking about a non-regulated industry, if there's such a phenomenon to begin with. But if you're talking about highly regulated industries, if it's now the health industry, banking industry, maybe the criteria are completely different. It could be worked out. And as Shragi said earlier, it's not here to discuss it in detail. Also, it's very true. Shragi gave one example of a solution that could be done, which is a very good solution, but does it fit everybody and so on and so forth? No, not necessarily. And I'm not saying that they have just to turn to the BHI, I'm not saying it at all. We are not here in for the business. We are business halacha institute, but we are not looking for the business per se. We are just looking here now that people should ask a shayla. Should people who are dealt with those issues know what they are talking about and not rely on heterim, which are very difficult. I just want to mention to you that the cult of Etam Mechirim, and I'm not here to attack it, but you should know that the cult of Etam Mechirim to sell the business for Shabbos only is a practice that was very, very much criticized by Dolly Oilam, by Moshe Fanchel's friend of Rocker, he didn't want to practice it. There are certain Etam Mechirim which he himself did, but he did it only in situations when he felt that otherwise he didn't have all Shabbos. But otherwise, it was very much in the opinion you shouldn't do that. Even in Europe, you know, people, to do it or not to do it, it was under conditions where it was very difficult to make a living content. So, Chazal say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Makdim Refuah L'Mako, the Kadosh Baruch Hu gives a sign to people if you can't really see the solution to that. And I don't feel that we have today the legal tools and also the technical tools to make it possible to establish it in a fashion where halachically it sounds. And as Abi said correctly, after everything is said and done, in principle you don't want to do something which is against Shabbos. But in case that there has to be there's an issue of potential for Shabbos, then you want to have some structure in place that takes care of it. Thank you very much.
Okay. I think that still certainly leaves us with some concern about what's going on out there in the world. In light of what we've heard, the Heta Mechira, I think, is the one is more.
I really forgot. Forgive, Chaim Dov, please. Because we both have some connection to the west side. I mean, there's another Heta I forgot to tell you. It's mentioned in the Gemara. Rav Huna said, "Keep Shodom Ovo Avir Mishonah Bo Nasir Keheta." This I forgot to tell you. I'm sorry. This is a Heta.
All right, that one we know. I'm curious, Avi, how did the Sharon company deal with these issues in the past? In any way? If I may.
Well, like I said, of course we dealt with it when we asked them. My father was close with Moshe Feinstein years ago, and also with Zimad Rabbanim, and we used to make different, each building it had a different Shah Shabbos or a different arrangement, but over time it just became unwieldy to manage so many different scenarios, because every time we asked the Shaila to somebody else, we did something different, and then there were these Shtaros which were like stuck in my file cabinet, and we don't remember which building had them, which building didn't, and also, once I got to talking to Rav Cohn about the issue and really delved into the Heter Mechira, the Shtar Shabbos, or some of the Shtaros, which I actually faxed one to him at one time, which basically just assigned the guy the rights to own the building for Shabbos, but the guy really never showed up, he didn't know where the building was. And so, although it does work, and it is discussed, we thought we could do something a little bit better. You know, we always try to improve, we try to be a little bit better, we try to do something that is more manageable, and that's where we arrived at this. But there are different answers, there are a variety of different rabbanim who will give you different responses. What I also liked about Rav Cohn and the Israel Halacha Institute is that we created some sessions with the staff to come and sit down and ask Shailas. Here, there's some pictures in the front of the book, if you look at it, of some of the sessions that we had with the staff in the office, which I found that in of itself created an awareness amongst the staff to be alert and be on the lookout. And that was something that, because the Business Halacha Institute is set up for that type of give and take, allowed them to come in and have that hands-on discussion. So we're moving in a different direction, as opposed to just running to the rub and you have an emergency shayla and asking what to do, and you make a quick shtar with the guy, and then you put in your drawing, you forget about it, and you forget what it really says, and then you assume that you bought another building and it goes into it. Here it's a much more formal structure. That's better than what we do.
Great. My reaction is, Ashrei Chelkachem. I mean, the Shron Mishpacha has always been known as trailblazers in terms of
of their remarkable chesed in Klal Yisrael, the various projects that they support that mean so much to Klal Yisrael. Great Balei Tzedakah, they're also known to be Mekatshei Shem Shamayim and their business ethics and all these other things. But to take this type of initiative and as an Nachshon Ben Aminadov in terms of setting up a system whereby Shmir Shabbos will be enhanced, I think, you know, Ashreichem and Halavai Kamoichem Yirgu B'Yisrael. Shragi, on a professional perspective, as an attorney, how complicated is it to set up these management corporations? Are these arrangements things that will require a major legal expertise, or you know, how just without going into the detail of the mechanics? But you know, how serious of an expenditure is this, for example?
Sure. So to set up just the legal entity, the management company, it's not expensive at all, and you can literally do it online. It takes less than a day to do.
Don't use online.
What I mean is to actually set up the LLC. That's done online. What I mean is have your attorney do it, but the attorney, you know, gone are the days we have to go down to City Hall and submit paperwork. You do that online, the entity will be set up.
It's
that's the LLC, the entity. So in other words, Mr. Gentile LLC, Management LLC, you do that very, very quickly. What's the complicated portion is then the management agreement. So great, you have your entity, you have your shingle, he can hang that up outside his door, then what? That, of course, Rav Cohen, is where I go nowhere else other than the BHI. Okay, and that's the complicated part. What took us longest here was not, you know, setting up an entity or anything like that. It was making sure that the agreement between the management company and the entity, the family in this case that owns the real estate, is up to snuff on both sides of the coin. I mean, you know, let me be frank. It's my job to make sure, you know, if I saw Avi going down a path where he was going to be exposing himself to any potential loss, or if someone might run away with half his business, chas v'shalom, or anything like that, well, it's my job to raise my hand and say, you know, I don't think you can do this. At the same time, the other side of the coin is, well, how can you accomplish your business goal while being totally compliant with halacha? So that's the part, the agreement, the nuances, the protections. That's the part that was more complicated, but I really meant what I said before, which is perhaps others have done this in the past. I don't know, but Avi and I are not aware of any. I don't think Rav Cohen was either. So it really is true that the hard work's been done. Once you're right, as a fellow attorney, you know, you used to practice back in the day, the best thing to start with is a template, and you can tweak a template. So here, there's a very unique template, which is a system and literally a physical document that the Sharons were able to craft in collaboration with Rotona with his guidance. And that document has baked into it the legal nuances and the halachic nuances. Once you start with that, sure, you definitely don't want to just take it out of the box, but that can now be customized for various individuals. So it was hard, but it will not be that hard for others.
Okay, we're going to take questions from the audience as well, but I would just want to pose one point with respect to the last thing you said, Rav Cohen, and that is that we now have a template which works for a real estate company. Does that same template, does that deal with, for example, the healthcare related issues that a nursing home would have to deal with? You spoke earlier about the chain, having a franchise store from a large chain. How to deal with that? Does this template deal with those issues as well?
First of all, it's not the same franchise. It might be the very same person who owns the name of the company and operates on his own. But yes, in principle it's the same, but again, it has to be custom designed, so to say, to the particular needs of the company. But yes, but there are also other solutions. This is not the only solution, but time-wise we are limited. The point is, people should care about it, definitely.
Okay, if the general takeaway, I guess what Rav Cohen is saying, the general takeaway is that there are issues here, and the issues are issues that need to be addressed with a sophisticated halachic perspective plus a sophisticated business perspective, and that consultation with appropriate rabbanim and dayanim can be helpful in moving that forward. Let's take some questions from the audience, if anybody would like to pose any. Question was, one of the things, and I think you mentioned this, Shragi, that you have to indemnify the non-Jewish proprietor of the management company, right?
Yes.
So the question is, why doesn't that make him in some way your shliach or your shutuf or whatever the case may be through this indemnification provision. I think it's a halachic question that Rav Kohn should address.
Well, it's a very simple answer to that. You're permitted to be an insurance company for anybody. So although whatever accident happened on Shabbos, you're permitted to cover the potential damages. Similarly, you too, you could be turned into a indemnifying somebody else, means, in other words, being an insurance company. It's no question.
Maisha.
I was fascinated by the management agreement and the revenue sharing. Well, one aspect of it, I was wondering,
is there a way to work out the headlines?
The question was, can one be an owner of a Treifa restaurant? Basically, that's it, right? Or a nursing home that doesn't provide kosher food, right? Forgetting about the Hilchos Shabbos aspect of it.
Very good point. And in fact, we had those persons sitting behind you, Chavotcher, dealt with that in detail. We had this question already coming up numerous times. And yes, once, you know, it's like if you start to touch one illness, you all of a sudden discover there are many other illnesses. So therefore, that's exactly what happened to you. Then they discovered all of a sudden they don't have only it's a Shabbos, the issues also is dealing with Machol Sefuiz, which is according to many, it's a device. And yes, it could be, this is one of the ways how you could deal with this issue and solve this problem as well. So, what to do? Please contact Lab and
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, back there. Yeah.
Thank you. You can move your employee onto a special master contract. Who said the union will allow you to do that? Fire everyone.
That sounds like a legal question. The question was, very good that you put the employees now onto the management contract, but what's the union going to say about all that?
Ah, okay, so I should have actually clarified earlier that with the union... Sorry. The union is indeed a different calculus, because the union is already, for many entities out there, the union is already on a separate cheshbon under...
He's right, no. You're right, but you could have the union work for a different payroll. The union doesn't really care whether the entity that's paying them is the ownership entity of the building, or it's another entity, as long as the staff is employed and they're getting their dues. And also, you just have to make sure you take care of what was that issue that we had about the withdrawal issues, that there's no withdrawal liabilities. But we've done that, and we've been doing this all along. Anyway, for other reasons, we didn't want to be the direct employers of the union staff for liability issues. So over the years, we've had other entities employ our union employees. Many times we've just taken an employee of ours and we said, okay, now you're in business, you have a management company for union employees, and we put the union employees on that payroll. We have to pay, of course, if there's any profits, any taxes for that individual, we make sure to indemnify him, and it's worked for us for many, many years anyway, besides the point. So that was, so it works for us for liability issues, it works for us in Shabbos issues also. We've done it. We have hundreds of employees working for other entities.
It's a better
return.
And with that, I'd like to ask Rav Chanoch Lubling to come to the podium.
I'm just going to spend 2 minutes. So, as Chaim David very well put it, Ashreinu, that we have askanim and business people that worry about halacha and look to conduct their business halacha. And I just want to add that Ashreinu, that we have a business halacha institute and Chashmish B'dayanim that are willing to undertake these tasks. And I want to tell you that I'm always amazed because when I tell friends about Business Halacha Institute, everybody says, what a tremendous thing, and they read the weekly book, they don't, but nobody ever asks, how do they live? How do they exist? Any organization, everybody knows, it costs money to run a kollel, to run an organization. And it's funny, there is no telephone number in the world where you can call and doctors on call and ask for medical advice and get medical advice for as long as you need, with nobody asking you for a credit card. And there's no legal office that I know. They're all interested in you calling them for free legal advice if you sign up, and they don't take any money till they get money, the whole business. but nobody gives free legal advice. Yet, we expect that we call Business Halacha Institute and a Rav Adayin will get on the phone and answer. And I know people told me half hour they were on the phone with all kinds of shilas. Nobody ever asked them for a nickel. Nobody asked them their names, their addresses, certainly not credit card numbers. But and I always tell Rav Chaim Cohen when he does what he should ask for a revenue sharing agreement, but he doesn't want to do that either. But I'm just saying that Business Halacha Institute is a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous organization and institute in our days, and we have a big achrayus to make sure that it can exist comfortably. We shouldn't have to worry about a budget, and that's my 2 cents. Shkai for coming to this.
Bye, Larry.
Yeah. So just one quick note. There was a question about e-commerce. We know that we did advertise that we would discuss it, and we do apologize for not having time. If there is anyone is interested in the topic, we'll be very happy to organize a separate shiur, whether it's a live or a teleshiur, an e-shiur. But please, if you can approach me afterwards, we'd be happy to make arrangements to address the halachos of those in the yanim. Thank you.
Yes, you pass the wall. Thank you.